How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. How you doing, Graham?
I'm good.
Good.
Want to record this?
Let's record. We're recording. Guys, welcome to another week of Autastic. I am one of your hosts, Kirk Smith, and this is my buddy,
Graham Kay. Hi. Hi, everybody.
We are two comics. We've missed you, Graham. We're two comics with autistic family members, people in our family with autism, or however you want to say it. And I have a severely autistic son. And Graham, tell us about your brother.
If you're new to the podcast, my brother is the best. He's Peter. He's 33. He's somewhere in the middle of the spectrum, verbal, has some jobs. He's a good example of what we are about to hear from Temple Grandin about forcing kids to work, which we can talk about later. And why don't you tell us, tell our listeners about what we got in store for them, Kirk? We got a big news.
Well, we have, as some of you know, our roving reporter is Jill Escher, who is she does some funding of what is it called? A genome research project? Is that right? Something like that?
Yeah. We know some very smart person, Jill Escher, who lives in San Francisco, head of the San Francisco Autism Society.
That's right.
And she does some reporting for us now and again, roving reporter Jill Escher. And she did. Got in contact with the world's most famous autistic person, I would say.
Yeah, I think so, right? She's got to be the most famous, I would say.
Yes, and that is Temple Grandin. They made a movie about her, an HBO movie.
Yeah, a really good movie.
Starring Claire. Yeah, we reviewed it one day. Anyway, so yeah, that's a big get for the old Autastic podcast.
Yeah,
probably the biggest celeb we've ever had on, I'd say.
The biggest autism celeb for sure.
Yeah.
The biggest autism celeb for sure. Yeah, she is the president of the Autism Society. You already said that. And the name of the conference was Autism in the Family, I believe, up in Santa Rosa, California.
So that's where Temple Grandin was speaking, and Jill went and got this sweet interview.
Yeah, I think Jill spoke in the morning, and Temple spoke in the afternoon. Is what happened. And
awesome! But so the interview's coming up later in the show, and
we could do it a little earlier in the show. You know, we could it's our show. We could do it however we want to do it. Let's run the interview, and then we can chit chat about it. Is that all right? What do you think, Graham?
Sure. Yeah, give it to the people. Give them what they want.
Give them what they want. All right, guys. Here it is. Here's our interview.
All right. Okay. And hello, everybody. This is Jill Escher, roving reporter for the wonderful podcast Autastic, and I'm sitting here with the esteemed Dr. Temple Grandin, who just gave an incredibly fabulous keynote address at the ANOVA conference in Santa Rosa, California. Hello, Dr. Grandin.
It's good to be here.
And so I told her very quickly about the wonderful Autastic podcast, and I just wanted to give everybody a little update about your life, Dr. Grandin. You just won a big award. Can you tell people about it?
Yeah, I got inducted to the Women's Hall of Fame. I'm really happy about that.
Yeah, congratulations.
Well, I can tell you, starting out in the cattle industry in the 70s in a man's world was not easy. And there's a scene in the HBO movie where bull testicles got put on my car, and that actually did happen.
It did happen. And those were your fellow cattlemen who were...
Actually, it wasn't the managers. It was the foremen that did the bad stuff. Most of the managers and owners were good. It was that layer of management at the foreman level that did most of the nasty things.
And because you were a woman.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You didn't let that bother you? Or how did that go after those early days?
Well, I was just going to prove that I could do it. You see, and one of the reasons I did those dip fat projects that were shown in the movie is I wanted to prove I could do it. I could do it right.
Let me take a little break here, listeners. And for the two of you in the audience who don't know, there was a major motion picture made about Dr. Grandin's life called Temple Grandin, starring Claire Danes. And if you haven't seen it, please see it. I know that Kirk and Graham have actually talked about the movie on this podcast before, so make sure to see it. So Dr. Grandin, tell everyone what you're up to now. I know you've written several award-winning, wonderful, best-selling books. What's on your plate these days?
Well, I'm really interested in helping students get into good careers. I've been doing a lot of talks on that, and I talk about the different kinds of minds. Visual thinkers like me who think in pictures, be good at industrial design. Pattern thinkers who are going to be good at computer programming and engineering. The word thinkers, others are auditory thinkers. And I talk about these different kinds of minds in my book, The Autistic Brain. Another thing I talk about a lot is I think one of the worst things the schools have done today is taken out all the skilled trades. Because right now, there's a whole lot of jobs in skilled trades. They're not going to get outsourced, and they're not going to get taken over by artificial intelligence.
Yeah, that was a really popular part of your talk today. That really resonated with people. People are expected to learn all kinds of more abstract things, and the actual hands-on kind of material work seems to be missing from our curriculum, and that's a good fit for a lot of people on the spectrum.
There's a huge shortage right now of diesel mechanics, auto mechanics, electricians, plumbers, and welders. You get the certificate in welding, you're hired instantly.
Well, tell people about some of the work you did when you were young. You went over that in your talk today. I was surprised at all the different jobs you had.
Well, I painted signs and I was selling them. I think we got to work on getting these kids to be more entrepreneurs. I just talked to a guy that's doing beautiful aviation pictures. Another person was doing some really good pictures of gardens. We got to teach them how to be entrepreneurs. When I started out my business in livestock handling, I started out, first of all, painting signs. And painting signs morphed into designing cattle handling facilities. You start out a freelance business, one small project at a time. And then you gradually build it up. And for a number of people on the spectrum, a freelance business would be a really good way to go.
I think you had incredibly great advice for families. If you have any advice that you can give to families who are struggling right now with children on the spectrum who are having difficulty learning,
That's too vague. I'm dealing with a concrete thinker. If the child's 3 years old, I can give you a standard answer. But the child's older, the concrete thinking actually works better because I can give you very specific advice. What's the age of the child? Is he getting bullied? Is he having trouble with math? I mean, I've got to know exactly what the problem is.
How about that? How about for the kid on the spectrum who's getting bullied at school, who's having trouble making friends, who's having trouble maintaining conversations?
Well, I think some of the bullying, I was bullied in high school, and the only places I was not bullied was shared interest, like horseback riding, model rockets, and electronics. Get the kids involved with shared interests. Another thing with these older kids, they got to learn how to work. I want to get rid of all this transition stuff. We need to start out 10 and 11 years old, volunteer jobs, maybe usher in a church, volunteer in the farmer's market. Got to learn how to work, how to do tasks outside the home, like walking dogs, as soon as illegal, get jobs. Just talked to a mom of a boy who's extremely good at editing video. Well, he's 11 years old. He can start making videos on assignment for other people. Let's learn something that he can turn into a job when he grows up.
And I want to close just by referencing your mother, who came in via Skype to address this 900-person audience today. Your mother is in her early 90s and is as lucid and feisty and potent as any mom, autism mom I've ever seen. And she's like the patron saint for autism moms.
Well, she knew just how hard to push me. I'm seeing too many kids get in coddle, like a smart 13-year-old boy that, fully verbal, had never gone in a store and bought something. And when I suggested to the mom that he ought to go in the office supply store and buy something, she broke down and started crying, saying she couldn't let go. I said, I'm talking about buying office supplies. I'm not talking about doing something scary.
Yeah.
But if he doesn't learn these things...
Your mom called it in her book, The Gentle Push.
That's right. Yeah. And some of this was 50s upbringing. She kind of had an idea just how much to push me, just stretch me outside the comfort zone. You don't chuck these kids in the deep end of the pool, but you got to stretch them, give them choices. You got to get out of your room. You can do robotics or you can do karate, but you're not going to just stay in your room.
Well, Dr. Grandin, thank you so much for your talk today. The audience loved it. Congratulations again. And thanks for sharing your voice with our listeners at Autistic.
Well, thank you very much. And the different kinds of minds, it's in my book, The Autistic Brain.
Thank you very much.
Okay. So?
Yeah.
What do you think? What are your first thoughts, Graham?
Well, I think I love what she said about getting the people, getting people out, getting people to work. Gentle push, what her mom does, gentle push. And I do think I agree with what she said about the 1950s sort of style of parenting may be more helpful to autistic people. I know that a lot of people coddle their kids, and my parents didn't do that to Pete, and he's got 4 part-time jobs and a sense of purpose. And, you know, it was really hard, and it was step by step. And my parents are really good at, you know, planting the seed and letting him argue and mull over it for 2 weeks. And then he'll comes to the conclusion. He's like, okay, I think you're right. Like when it's his decision, like, you know, it's just everyone's got their own technique.
Another process.
I have a very good friend, a friend I grew up with, and his brother is higher on the spectrum, way higher than Peter. And he was able to go to university and get a degree in history. But, you know, hasn't left home, doesn't talk to people, is depressed.
Right.
They just got him a job walking dogs, and which is great. It's his first ever job. He's like, you know, almost 30.
Right.
And it is, in my opinion, his mother coddled him a bit. His mother's a lovely woman, and, you know, was single mom, doing her best, and, who am I to tell anybody, you know, right. I don't know what the pain is. I mean, you know him better than I do. You're a parent. But it just, in my opinion, she coddled him, and he's finally breaking out of his shell. He's walking dogs. But I think he could do more. I think he could.
Well, here's what I was going to say. I think that, so we're in the news. I'm tipping my hat a little bit, but there's a great article in Nova about artificial intelligence can detect early signs of autism in infants. And the problem with labeling or the diagnosis, in my opinion, is it does allow for some help, but then it also feeds into the parents' own preconceptions about what that means and the child's limitations. So like,
sure,
if you have a neurotypical kid, you don't normally you don't limit them at all. You think, oh, sky's the limit. You tell them, oh, you could be president, which probably couldn't happen, but that's how you think. But with a kid with autism, you already, okay, don't push him too hard. You don't want him to, whereas if you gave him that little push that Temple's talking about, who knows? You know, I'm not saying maybe he can't be president, but maybe he could be president of a company. Maybe, you know, maybe not president of the United States, but president of his own company or president of a university.
President of a dog walking company.
Yeah.
I think
you're right. I think we these labels, the only downside I see in that part is the, you know, you start limiting what's possible, and as a consequence, you coddle him a little bit because you're like, ah, this poor kid, he's already, no, he could, you know.
Do you think you've done that with your kid? I mean, I know he's higher.
Well, I do know that somehow the school that he's in, you know, it's, you know, he's 18, but the school he's in can stay until he's 21. It's kind of like a high school. Uh-huh. They get more out of him than we do. So how's that work? You know, they'll get him to talk a little bit more and do more chores and do more. And I think part of it is they don't coddle him. They're not his dad or his mom, so they don't feel sorry for him or feel like, oh, you know, his poor little baby. He's not a baby. He's 18.
Yeah.
He's got a better mustache than I do.
He
he's killing that stash. I think that's a big problem. I think that's a big problem where, you know, because you have all this guilt and all this other stuff as a parent, so that one of the ways of assuading that guilt is by not pushing them.
Guilt. Why do you have guilt, Kirk? It's not your fault.
Oh, man. The thing is about life is hindsight's always 20/20. So, like, just as a normal human being, there's 100 things I could have done different in my life I should have pushed this show. I should have done that. I should have, as a comedian. And then when you're a parent, it's the same thing. You're like, I could have tried a different therapist. I could have tried, you know, 1,000 different things. There's always something that you feel like I could have done different.
Oh, you think you could have. Well, I got news for you, bud. The only thing that you could have done is love him and give him as much time as possible, and that's what you did. So
there was a lot of tickling and love. Yeah, there was a lot of
love. There you go. So just, it's the way he was born. There's no guilt, you know.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's reasonable or logical. I know it's something a lot of our listeners struggle with based on the on the notes. And shoot, his mom messaged me today. I don't think it's too personal, but she was like, you know, I did my best, and, you know, she's feeling a little bit, you know, you have those little moments of self-doubt where you're like, Yeah. So I think it's normal. That was that deep sigh I'm not supposed to do into the microphone.
You have so many deep contemplative sighs in the show. We should edit them together one day. Just another day, Kirk. At the end of the show, Kirk signs off by saying, "You can do this." And I want you, our regular listeners think that it's for them, but it's not for you guys.
It's, no, for, it's him. For me.
He's saying it to himself. Yeah.
Well, what I say is, "You could do this," and then I stop the recording and I say, "Kirk."
Yeah, yeah.
You can do this, Kirk, but you only hear the first part.
Yeah, and then he just stares at the wall for another good 30 seconds, and I just let him do it.
Off into the middle distance.
Yeah, I'll start packing up the gear. Let him. Let him have his autistic dad moment.
Funny.
You know?
That's funny. Oh, man.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Going back to the interview, I loved the interview. I'm appreciative that she gave us her time. I know she's very busy. And, I think she made a lot of good points, reiterated points that we've made on the show. And it always sounds better when it comes from the mouth of someone who is autistic. So, it's... So if you're autistic and listening to this and you're like, those neuronormative people don't know what the heck they're talking about, you know? I mean, all I know is what it's like to be a person, and I wish, you know, people that are pushed more end up doing better.
Yeah, and pushing yourself. I had
regardless of if you're autistic or not.
My week in review was I had two this is my not really an autism one, just my own personal. Had a couple meetings trying to put together with agents and a show at the Laugh Factory. And honestly,
are we doing the week in review now?
Yeah, it's a little week in review.
A little week in review, baby.
Honestly, I've kind of fell on my face this week. A lot of things did not work. I had one of the guys flake on me. The other guy come out to a show. There's he came out to a light show, which is always fun when you perform in front of 30 people. It sounds like you're performing in front of 30 people. So, yeah. But I think that's part of it, just to keep pushing yourself, just to keep push. Yeah.
You got to keep pushing, man. I mean, keep pushing until you don't want to do it anymore. Just keep pushing. And that's good. I mean, because it'll be every time I'm like, I shouldn't go out and I'm too tired to go out and like mingle or I don't have any shows. So you got to go to like hang out at a show if you're a comic. And, and I always end up getting booked and meeting cool new people, and I come home and I'm like really glad I did.
Yeah,
you know.
We're sent. JJ's got a disco this week. He's going to a disco.
Got your
party.
Son, JJ.
Yeah, JJ. Yeah, my son. Mm. Long time listeners will know that he has a very active social life at the this little school. They always have stuff where they kick the parents out and they say you guys need to go home. And he's got a little disco coming up. I'm going to see him in a few weeks. And,
sweet.
Getting him some more clothes. He tears through the clothes. Man, we go through a lot of clothes. A lot of tearing of the clothes specifically too.
Oh, he likes to rip them?
Yes. It's very hard on stuff. Very hard on stuff. So
week.
How about you? What was your week like this week? You're out in Canada on the
I got a question for you. Is he starting to learn Swedish?
Yeah, a little bit. We're working on that a little bit. You know, he gets talked to in Swedish a lot, which is...
he lives in Sweden, by the way, with his mom, and he goes, yeah, that's where his special school is.
Makes more sense than learning Swedish in L.A., but yeah.
Yes.
The thing about learning Swedish that there's only 9 million people in the world that speak Swedish, so it's like, it's helpful in Sundsvall in Sweden, but not so much in anywhere else. But yeah, he's learning a little Swedish, and so it's limited vocab, but we're hoping. There's progress. It's just slower than we'd like, but yeah.
Sure. Well, good.
That's what's going on. Yeah, and I'll see him in March. I'm going out there again, so it should be good. Should be good.
That's soon. That's great, man. Really great. What's going on with me? Not too much. I mean, I'm on the road. I've been on the road for 5 weeks now. I'm in Canada because, and I'm waiting for my green card approval. Well, I've been approved, but I'm waiting for some finalization, government bureaucracy to work its way through. And just working up here, it's fun. And what's that noise?
Oh, sorry, I was scribbling here. I'm just doodling here. I think when you said that last time, I think only you can hear this.
But okay.
I'll stop doodling.
No, it's okay.
I was listening. And, green card's coming. I'm listening.
So yeah, doing that. You know, I'm having fun. Peter is he's doing well, taking care of. My parents are on vacation, so my brother is tasked with taking care of the dog and watering the plants. And it's fun. Like, so I'm in between being on tour. I'll come home for like a few days here and there in between weekends, and because I work on the weekends. And so I'm using basically my parents' place as my home base for a couple days a week here and there. And my mom doesn't trust me to take care of the plants. She only trusts Peter. She only trusts the autistic brain. She's like, no, if you lock it into Peter, it's done. It's just you. She goes, you sunny boy, all my plants will be dead. So you're like your father. You can't remember a damn thing. Peter is just a fantastic memory, and he is reliable. People always ask, like, how does he live on his own? Because he doesn't understand. The example I always use is he doesn't understand that $5 is worth more than 10 cents. That makes no sense to him. He cannot figure that out. He doesn't understand time. Like, he's like, you know.
Yeah.
But so people ask, how does he live on his own? I'm like, well, because if, trust me, that stove will be off. There's a, when he leaves the house will be locked. The stove will be off. Everything will be in perfect order. Whereas you and me, I don't know. I don't know if I turn off the stove.
You know, that's funny.
He's way more reliable. He's just, if you teach him something, he'll lock in. If something goes off script, then he's got to have a parachute to pull, someone to call and ask why the fire alarm's off, why there's a plumber at the door, why, you know, there's flooding or what, you know, anything. But if everything's normal, he's more solid than any of us listening. I promise you. So he's doing well.
I love it.
So I come home and we were in my parents' house together, just hanging, eating, making pizza. We went bowling recently.
That's great, man. Sounds like he's enjoying his time with his big brother. His big brother.
Yeah, brother time. We call it brother time. He's like, sometimes I'll invite other people and they'll be like, Graham, I think it's more important that we spend brother time together.
That's nice, man.
I think it is, Pete. I think you're right.
You only have one brother. One brother.
He's the best.
Should we do in the news?
Yeah.
So this is on PBS, Nova Next website, public broadcasting. Artificial intelligence detects early signs of autism in infants. By using artificial intelligence to decipher brain scans, researchers were able to predict with startling accuracy which high-risk infants end up developing autism by age 2. Basically, at around age 2, kids, you can see it by the lack of eye contact or not responding to their name. But before that, it's hard to tell because they're under the age of 2. But the artificial intelligence machines can study the MRI scans of 6 to 12 months olds and can forecast with 81% accuracy. Wow. It's an interesting article. Here's the ups and the downs. Like what we talked about is, you know, if you knew, I mean, it'd be great to know to get him right away the help he needs. But at the same time, if it would make you somehow not dream as big for the kid or like, you know, give him a pass when he's like, you know, doing behavior stuff. Because no matter what the diagnosis, the behavior stuff has to be addressed, you know? You still can't stick your hand in the stove. You still can't, you know, there's all these things. And so it is interesting, though. I think
maybe it'll help early diagnosis will help with fixing it a little earlier.
Yeah.
Or mitigating the symptoms.
Yeah, send your letters about fixing it to Graham, not me. But yeah, I think.
Oh yeah, sorry guys.
The therapy.
I don't mean fixing it. Sorry, you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think you're right though. I think the therapy, getting them to therapy or ABA or trying to get them the help they need.
You guys don't need to be fixed. I'm sorry. You don't need to be fixed. You're beautiful humans. We need you the way you are. But you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah. No, some of the behavior and try to get them to be productive members of society. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's very interesting. I think the direction science going, it's you know, every year it's detected a little earlier. So being able to detect a kid at 6 months is crazy.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I mean, that's amazing. How does it, it's just a bunch of MRIs.
And they have an MRI and then they have a little picture here, but it has to do with the colored cortex. Okay. The colored cortical areas of the brain representing the regions with significant expansion of basically they're examining the brain. This isn't a science broadcast.
No. We're not, listeners know.
We are not scientists.
No.
But basically, yeah, they're scanning the brain and the neural activity. And then they're hoping that researchers believe that the brain changes that come with ASD develop much earlier, possibly as early as in the womb. So I don't know. I think it'd be that obviously opens up a whole nother can of worms if you know, because that's a thing now where if you know your kid's Down syndrome, you know, they tell the mom that, and then there's a whole decision, and that's helps a whole nother can of worms. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's a tough
one. I mean, that's amazing. Not there. I mean, I'm glad that I think it's good. I think it's good for newer parents. You know, early detection is always good.
I think more.
I don't know what therapy you can do with an infant. You know, there's like that motor therapy that people use now. I don't know what you can do with an infant. I have no idea. But
yeah,
I'm sure there's something.
Can't hurt to have the more knowledge. You know, the more information, the better. I think. Yeah. Well, I think we did it, guys. I'm in St. John's this week. Where are you at this week, Graham?
Oh, this week I'm in the Yuk Yuks in Halifax, Nova Scotia.
Ooh, I've done
pretty
that.
Pretty sweet. Yuk Yuks, I'm up near Maine.
It's a really nice.
Near, it'll be good. Be good, and then hopefully back in LA in the next couple weeks.
That's awesome.
Be great.
That's awesome. Follow Graham on Graham K Comedy and social media. I'm at Kirk Smith Comedy. Same social media: Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. We love getting your letters. If you have a second, you can sponsor us on patreon.com/autastic, AUSTA. You guys know how to spell it. And
I like how you gave up. You don't know how to spell it. How are they supposed to know?
It's you'll figure it out. Google.
Yeah. Anyway, go on Patreon, guys. Really, it does help us quite a bit. If you haven't already, feel free to donate $1 a week. That really helps us. We appreciate the donations we've already received. You guys are the best. You help keep us doing it for sure. And I think that's it.
Guys. That's it. We love you. You can do it.
Yes, you can, Kirk.